Following Blandin's purchase of the Itasca Paper Company, as we have seen, the plant was a scene of bustling activity. New machinery, new equipment, repairs, new building project, dam refurbishment, including replacing the water wheels, all kinds of things. In directing the affairs, both of the Dispatch Printing Company and of the Itasca Paper Company, Charles Blandin was very conscious of the needs and rights of his employees. Although an extremely demanding taskmaster, expecting a full measure of hard work from all in his employ, Blandin followed a policy of fairness. He set wages and benefits at prevailing standards, sometimes slightly higher. Just a few months after the purchase of the paper mill, Blandin raised wages to compensate for World War I inflation. Even though the American Federation of Labor Union, that had been established at the mill in 1911, had entered into a binding contract that still had months to run, the mill provided what the Independent called a substantial increase in pay for union and non-union employees. A year later, the company quickly responded to the new wage schedules of the War Industries Labor Board with an average 10 cents per hour increase. Between June of 1916 and May of 1919, workers at the Grand Rapids Mill had pay increases of 53%. In 1920, another 20% increase compensated for inflation, and that was noted in the Herald Review as another evidence of the progressive policy of the management of the mill. That article further stated that there had been no labor trouble of any kind and no disagreement between the men and their employers. Blandin also sought to keep relations with his mill employees positive by providing entertainments and social gatherings on appropriate occasions. In 1919, he rented the new Grand Theater for a film showing on Christmas Day. There was free popcorn, and Mrs. Frank Gum, and of course is Judy Garland's mother, sang accompanied by an orchestra. The Independent said everyone enjoyed the program and congratulated Blandin on this method of spreading Christmas cheer. The following year, Blandin hosted a reception for employees at the villa. The Swanson Orchestra of Blackberry provided music and refreshments were served. The Herald Review commented, "The many people that attended are unanimous in praise of the pleasant afternoon they enjoyed at the Blandin home and feel they can be even more loyal than ever before, if that's possible, to the organization that has a real human interest in those that assist in making its success possible." In a 1920 issue of Leslie's Weekly Magazine, a sketch delineated Blandin's rise from farm boy to the head of two large corporations and quoted him as saying, "It all seems like a dream to me now, and sometimes I wake up at night and the old feeling I had when I was tramping the streets of St. Paul seeking a job with only $5 in my pocket returns. It all seems like a dream now." The article interpreted that background as the key to understanding the warm relationship between Blandin and his employees. "Mr. Blandin is one of the very few employers in the country, probably the only one, who was invited by his employees to attend their deliberations. Paper mill workers were generally trying to their employers," the story went on. However, such was not the case with the Itasca Paper Company. There, the workers elected Blandin to membership in their union and insist upon his attending their meetings when he is at the mill. The article described Blandin as always carrying a gold fountain pen given to him by his employees and quoted him as saying that he was prouder of that pen than anything else I own in the world. "I've not forgotten that I came up from the ranks. The only viewpoint I have in the world is the viewpoint of the working man." The magazine article concluded that few men looked on their careers with such unaffected modesty. Well, despite positive relations between Blandin and his paper mill employees, a major confrontation was in the offing. During the first decades of the century, unions representing the often fiercely independent employees of the pulp and paper industry remain small, facing a hard struggle in their efforts to improve conditions for the workers. But even so, they could claim a large share of the credit for eliminating the grueling two-shift system. As indicated previously, a 1913 union called strike at the Itasca Paper Company resulted in instituting the three-shift system in the Grand Rapids Mill. Industry acceptance of the three-shift schedule was, of course, a major gain for its employees. In 1921, the International Papermakers Union called for a 10% pay increase. A consortium of large paper mills in the East, again feeling the effects of depressed paper prices, that print paper pendulum has swung again, and prices indeed are much lower than what they'd been before, cutting into profits, countered with a proposal to reduce wages by 30%. You can imagine how that went over. Not surprisingly, union locals almost unanimously rejected the offer. A nationwide strike began, and the effects were soon felt in Wisconsin and Minnesota. At International Falls, 2,000 workers lost their wages when a strike closed the mill. In Cloquet, 600 were affected. In Grand Rapids, the Herald Review reported that the mill force was still at work with no disorders or dissatisfaction expressed. And the paper further stated, little difficulty in securing an adjustment of wage conditions is anticipated, and a strike is considered extremely unlikely here. Blandin, hoping to avert a strike, offered the local union a 15% wage reduction with the promise that final settlement would be commensurate with whatever was achieved elsewhere. He also arranged an open meeting with Grand Rapids businessmen in attendance to discuss labor demands because he felt the public had as much interest in the matter as the employer and the employees. He was prepared to take advice and to give every consideration to company and community interests. Well, the International Union president, headquartered in New York, informed local union members that because the wage issue was of nationwide import, support of the strike by Grand Rapids workers was mandatory. The president ignored all further communications from Grand Rapids, and when Blandin made a trip to New York just to see him, the president was not available. Blandin had intended to argue that the circumstances of the Itasca Paper Company were unique. All of its paper production was used to supply related newspaper interests and therefore did not influence the market price. Despite local union members freely admitting that they had no grievances against the management of the paper mill, most felt committed to the strike called by their union. Less than 2 weeks after the Herald Review had so confidently predicted that there would be no labor problem in Grand Rapids, the local union announced support of the strike, and paper production ceased at the Itasca Paper Company. Well, non-union members crossed the picket lines and continued some operations, such as making pulp. The Herald Review reported, conditions around the mill are very quiet with no symptoms of disorder. But ominously and bitterly, Charles Blandin remarked that the dilatory action of Corey in not responding to telegrams and letters from the local union and his lack of interest in allowing the Itasca Paper Company to remain in production has made it impossible in the future to enter into a contract with the national organization. The strikers in Grand Rapids had followed the dictate of their union, but their support was about to cost them dearly. Blandin's new policy was simple and direct. No member of the International Papermakers Union would henceforth be employed by the Itasca Paper Company, and no further agreements of any kind would be made with the organization. At the same time, Blandin indicated that any striker who resigned from the union and reapplied for employment at the mill would not be subject to discrimination. 5 years of harmonious relations between the Itasca Paper Company and the International Papermakers Union had come to an abrupt end. So Blunden had prevailed, and the union was gone. And the consequences of that were going to be far-reaching, and many changes for Grand Rapids workers and their families were going to ensue from what Blunden had done. So let's look at that next time.